Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's great to have you here. Now, before we get into our conversation today, I wanted to share with you why Jeff Hall and I have started Clear Aligner Excellence. Jeff and I sat down and we were thinking about the opportunity that aligners provide for general practices to really improve the business, you know, to drive more revenue, to improve patient outcomes, and of course, to increase the professional satisfaction of the whole team. And so we sat down and we put our heads together and we think, well, why are people not taking up this opportunity that is clearly there? The market we know is growing. And so it came back to a couple of key things. The first one is a lack of confidence from a clinical point of view. You know, how do I treatment plan? How do I get my clin checks and my setups right? And then, of course, how do I deliver the treatment to a high standard? And then the second part of that was really equally, how do I understand how to integrate aligners into my practice from a commercial point of view? How do I market it? How do I present the cases so they're accepted? What do my workflows look like? And finally, we looked at really the lab fees and how they impact the profitability of that particular treatment. So Jeff Hall and I sat down and we put together Clear Aligner Excellence, which is really designed to help you understand all the ins and outs of the clinical components of providing aligner therapy to a really high standard, how to integrate it into your practice so it operates smoothly, successfully, and profitably, but equally how to save money on your lab fees. And we're really delighted to announce that we've got the five big aligner companies joining us in Clear Aligner Excellence to give you access to cheaper lab fees. And we've got a whole other bunch of member perks there as well. We're really excited about it. We're really proud of it. If you want to find out more about Clear Aligner Excellence and how you could join us with that, head across to clearx.com.au/dentists and come and join us and we'll take it from there. But for now, I want to introduce you to my host. My host is someone who's been around marketing forever and a day. She's got a background in, you know, the big end of town marketing, large multinational corporations, and moved into dental marketing through her work with Dental Corporation. And now it took that big end of town marketing and has applied it to smaller businesses. My guest, of course, is Michelle Taylor from Marketing Practices. And in our conversation today, we really unpack how to develop a marketing strategy. We understand the essential elements of a strategy, how those tactics need to support that strategy, but we answer some specific questions about, you know, how to open a practice from scratch, but with a wait list of patients ready to go, so you're not starting from a standing start. We talk about the number one mistakes that we see practice owners make with their marketing, and we talk about budgets in marketing. Do you need a big budget or not? How to work within a constrained budget, and a whole heap of other things. So if you want to find out more about Michelle and what she does, you can head across to marketingpractices.com.au and find out more about her there. But for now, let's get on with the show. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. Here she is. Michelle Taylor, thank you so much for taking the time to come out and hang with us at the Savvy Dentist Podcast. How's things with you?
Yeah, really well, thank you. And it's an absolute pleasure to be here and have a chat with you about marketing dental practices.
Well, the pleasure is all mine because I've got a feeling we're both going to geek out a little bit today because I know you're super enthusiastic about marketing. It's what you do. It's what your background is. And I really enjoy it too. But before we do get into that geekery of all manner, what I wanted to ask you is about how you found your way into marketing practices because, again, it's not really something you put on your year 12 exit form. You know, I think I'm going to go and start a business called Marketing Practices. You know, how did that come about?
Yeah, so I have been working in marketing my whole career. I actually did a university degree in marketing and I knew that was kind of the area that I wanted to go in. But to a uni student, the glitz and glamour of marketing big brands with big budgets was definitely quite attractive to me at that stage. So I worked for several multinational organizations in pharmaceuticals. I worked for 3M, I've worked for Boehringer Ingelheim, and getting that experience within a big organization. I also worked at Nestlé in confectionery, which was an incredible experience.
Yeah.
And just being within those big organizations, the one thing I did learn very quickly was that it's not necessarily a big budget that makes a lot of the difference. And I worked for Dental Corporation in its early years before it merged into Bupa. And it was at that point that I really discovered how challenging it was for a dental practice owner to be the expert on everything. And all of these small dental practices that were operating as businesses and the practice manager and the practice owner needing to be across everything from HR to accounts to finance to, you know, fixing the printer that breaks down, patient experience, all of that kind of stuff. And by the way, marketing is your thing as well. So at that point in time, I realized that there was a big need for educating dentists. And the issue was that, you know, throughout all of those years and years and years of study, it's not the dentist's fault that they were never taught this stuff. And it makes it really difficult. So that was one of those things. And that was about 10 years ago that I was in that position and then worked for Fairfax Media. I worked for Gore-Tex products. I was traveling up to Asia every 6 weeks in the good old days when we could travel freely. And then I had children, and that was really at a point where I'm like, oh, you know, it's a bit harder to have those roles and have all of that responsibility and also have children as well. So while I was on maternity leave, it just by coincidence, I was asked by a lot of dentists and also medical practices who just knew that I was not working at the time and was helping them start up practices and market the practices. So it basically evolved from there. So for 10 years, I've been helping smaller businesses with marketing and kind of using my big corporate knowledge with all the resources that I had and bringing that to the smaller business.
That's really interesting. And look, you've given me quite a few interesting segues, a few threads to pull on there. So we'll come to each of those in a second. But I'm curious to ask, just as we start off, you mentioned in those large organizations, whether it was Nestle or whichever large corporation, it wasn't a big budget that made the difference. It was obviously something else. And I'm curious to ask you what that something else was.
Yeah, so there's probably two things. And this is kind of the secret to marketing that I often talk about. The first secret is really consistency in what you do. So whether you're a big brand and you are stop, start with your big budget television commercials and all of those types of things, or whether you are a practice owner with a practice that you're marketing, consistency in your marketing and messaging is really the key. And the second thing that is really important is understanding who your ideal target audience is and know them intimately. Mm-hmm. Know their beliefs, their attitudes, their external pain points, their internal pain points. And when you can do that and understand them at that level, you have a much better opportunity to be able to speak directly to their emotions rather than just the practical side of things, which they're not so much, it's not so much going to move the needle in terms of getting them to make an appointment or purchase something.
It's a really good starting point, actually, isn't it? Because when it comes to marketing, the consistency piece clearly is going to be so important to be omnipresent and be here one day and the next and the day after, not just here and gone. But to the point of the ideal patient avatar that you're speaking about there, again, one of the things that I've always felt around that is trying to get that message right only comes when you know that person that you're trying to speak to so intimately, almost better than they know themselves. You're kind of entering into a conversation that they're having privately in their own mind rather than the things that they might even say publicly. So what are the things that they lie in bed and think about when it comes to dentistry? What are the things that they're worried about or their hopes and aspirations? And I'm curious to ask you, I mean, I know we have a process around that, but I'm curious to ask how you go about helping dentists uncover who that avatar is. What's that process of really getting to know your ideal patient so that you can speak to them in a way that makes sense for them?
Yeah, look, there is a process that we go through, and getting your staff involved in that process is a really good thing as well, to be able to research and find more about them. I often say to practice owners, you know, pick five patients in your practice that you currently see, that if you could clone those into 100, 200, 500 patients, you know, you'd be one very happy practice owner. Who are they? What are their needs, problems, and pain points? And ask them and talk to them about it. Ask your staff, because they're often having conversations with patients when they come in, and they can delve into some of these issues and just pick up on some of these nuances that they're talking about. The other place that I love to go and research is in Facebook groups. So go to your local Facebook group, have a look in there. You can type in dentist as a search term, and you will see a lot of different posts coming up. And one post in particular comes to mind. Someone said, I'm looking for a dentist who's great with kids.
Yep.
You know, someone that makes them feel comfortable. The kids are a bit anxious. And it was like literally a one sentence post looking for recommendations. And it wasn't necessarily the original post that was the important part. It was all the comments that came through. And some of those comments, oh, they're great with kids. They've got their own kids, so they understand, you know, they're really good with kids. Or they've got a fish tank at the in the reception area. The kids love going in there. Or, you know, oh, go to this practice because they get these little goodie bags. The kids love it. Or the TV's on the ceiling. All of those types of things. And you could go through this post and there was 60, 70, 80 comments.
Oh, wow.
And you could pick up masses of information about what parents with children value when they go to the dentist.
Mm.
And the interesting thing is that you might actually be doing a lot of those things in your practice, but you're not communicating.
Not communicating. No one knows, right?
That's right. So yeah. A lot of people who, you know, come to my webinars and have heard me speak before, they know that I'm very much an introvert. I really know what I want to focus on when it comes to social media and how much of the lens of my private life I want to give on that. And I'm in a situation where I don't really want to show pictures of my children's faces and those types of things on social media. And that's my choice. Respect everybody else's choice, but that's mine. And, you know, a lot of people kind of feel this way as well. And they say, well, you know, I've got kids too, but, you know, I say, well, have you ever posted about the kids? Have you made a comment about them or anything like that? And I've since spoken to practice owners where I've said, you know, if you're at the beach, for example, take a photo of the back of the kids. You don't have to, you just need to give the impression that you're a family person, because people make that relationship between, okay, they've got their own kids. They understand that my child's not going to be the best behaved child when we go to the dentist, right? So it's all about understanding what patients are after and then matching that with communication about your practice. It might be the goodie bags, you know, that kids take a photo of some of your staff's kids if they're happy to do that. And with their goodie bags smiling, saying, you know, another happy customer going home with their goodie bags and all of those types of things. So whilst you're doing all of these things, it's about making sure we tell people that we're doing it as well.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of really good stuff in there. And again, we could talk for days and days and days on this, but what I'd really just like to ask you is about marketing strategy versus marketing tactics. Because when I talk to practice owners, some of the conversations come up with, hey, Jesse, do you think I should be on Instagram? Or Jesse, do you think I should be running a Facebook ad? Or Jesse, what should I be doing here and here? And my default is, you know, hey, let's just look at this, step back a little bit and look at this in context of some form of strategy. So I wondered if we could have a bit of a talk about strategy versus tactics. And then knowing that we've got some clarity around our ideal client now, how do we start building out that strategy rather than getting kind of drawn into a series of tactics that may be, you know, linked or not linked or congruent with what we're trying to achieve? Can we have a bit of a chat about that?
Absolutely. They are two different things, but you need the strategy first, and then you can work out the marketing activity and tactics second, because they need to feed back into the strategy. So a marketing strategy really defines what you want your brand to be in terms of its brand personality, the look and feel of the brand, the positioning. Do you want to be a really high-end, glamorous cosmetic dentist? And if that's the case, then that needs to be on in your marketing strategy, and then your tactics and your marketing activity will reflect that initial strategy. So within the marketing strategy, we generally have your objectives of what you hope to achieve. Mm-hmm. We have your brand identity. So that could be your logo, your brand colors, your fonts, imagery that reflects your brand. Mm-hmm. It might be the actual brand personality, the brand values, all of those types of things go into the marketing strategy. And the other thing that I'd like to include there are the critical issues. What are the critical issues that are facing your practice right now that we need the marketing plan to address? So it might be a critical issue is getting patients to get back to their general 6-monthly cycle because of all the disruption from COVID. That might be a critical issue that we need to solve. It might be that a competitor's just opened up a few doors down, and you know, how do we make sure that patients and potential patients know the difference between the two practices? Once you know those critical issues, then you can take that next step and work out those marketing activities and those tactics to relate to the marketing strategy. So the tactics are, you know, what you do on social media, Facebook ads, Google ads, things that you're doing on Google My Business, local newspaper ads, anything, you know, all of those kind of marketing tactics, letterbox drops, public relations within the local newspaper, those types of things, sponsorships, joint promotions, all of those things are marketing tactics. And when we figure out what we do with those tactics, we need to always make sure we're coming back to that marketing strategy and say, okay, so if I'm going to invest in Facebook ads, is this going to help my critical issues? And is it going to feed into the marketing strategy? If it doesn't align, then we don't do it and we find another activity that is able to feed into that strategy. So they're the differences. One is the plan and the other one is the doing.
It's really interesting because I think you've touched on a really important point, and that is the congruence between the strategy and the tactics. And as you were talking about that, I was reminded of someone I know from some time ago, no names, no court martials. And this particular lady wanted to have her practice as a really high-end practice, just to illustrate this point and how important your point is. And I remember saying to her, we're going through a bit of a brand identity exercise, when I said, sometimes, you know, if your brand were a car, what sort of car would it be? If your brand were a personality, who would it be? Anyway, she wanted to describe her brand as a Rolls-Royce. And of course, Rolls-Royce being premium luxury, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, when we sat down to talk about marketing tactics, because she was doing cosmetics and implants and all the rest of it, her marketing tactics that she wanted to adopt was a 2-for-1 strategy. And we're going, well, when was the last time you saw a Rolls-Royce do a 2-for-1 deal? Like, they don't do that.
No.
And so I think to your point, that congruence between activity and strategy is really, really key. And I really like the way you've said loop back and check in around that, because it's easy to get caught up in the tide of, yeah, hey, I should be doing Instagram, or I should be doing this, or I should be doing that. I see so-and-so is doing really well with XYZ, but they might have a totally different ideal avatar to you, or they might have a totally different strategy. So I wanted to ask you, how do you stay true to your strategy and stay the course to that strategy when it's easier to kind of get caught up with what's happening? And a follow-up question around that, which, sorry, I'm just firing them at you now, is you've touched on a few things already, and I really want to hone in on this, because in today's world, we focus so much on digital, but you've already mentioned a couple of offline things. You've mentioned newspapers, you've mentioned PR, and I wanted to talk about that blend of online and offline, because when you have that nice blend, it's not so easy to reverse engineer an offline strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. To answer your first question.
Yeah, sorry, there's about 30 questions.
That's okay. Remind me of the first question again.
Yeah, no, sorry.
So keeping your marketing strategy relevant requires you to not put it in the bottom drawer. Mm. So often we kind of do our marketing strategy and yes, you know, that's it. We're done and it goes in the bottom drawer. It's filed on your computer somewhere and we don't refer back to it. You need to be, and your staff need to be, your brand custodian. So no matter what, you need to be meticulous about making sure that your brand and everything that you do is absolutely consistent with what that strategy is. Often I see practices actually putting up their brand personality, their brand values on the wall, particularly to remind everybody what their strategy is all about. But, you know, I would be going back and looking at your marketing strategy every 1 or 2 months just to remind yourself of all the great work that you have done to figure out exactly your vision for the practice and to make sure that you are staying the course on that. Because the worst thing that you can do is go off course. A confused mind doesn't buy. And when you're not consistent, you get to the point where people are too confused about what that is. And your perfect example of the Rolls Royce versus the two for one, that's confusing. And people won't even tell you exactly why that's confusing. It just doesn't sit right with them. Even if you're the premium of premium practices and you print some flyers on, you know, you kind of went on the cheap just to kind of get them done. Again, you know, brand consistency is absolutely key. I will tell you, when I worked at Gore-Tex Products, I was the Asia Pacific regional PR manager for Gore-Tex. I had a set of brand guidelines, global set of brand guidelines that was over 200 pages long. Wow. Now that is extreme, but that is a business that wants its brand to be reflected in exactly the same way, whether we are down here in Sydney, whether we are, you know, in Asia, Europe, North America, whatever, whenever you see that brand, it's represented in exactly the same way. And to be honest, all the big brands have got that. So having a good solid set of brand guidelines. If you're working with a marketing agency, make sure that they remain true to that is super important. So definitely review your marketing strategy, you know, once a month, once every 3 months, and make sure that you and your team are the brand custodian of your practice's vision and what you hope to achieve there.
Really, really appreciate what you're saying there. And I wanted just to pick up on a point because, and this might be, I don't know, maybe a little bit counterintuitive or not counterintuitive, it might be a little bit cheeky, but sometimes when I speak to dentists or practice owners, I say, look, I just don't want to have to think about marketing. I just want to do my dentistry. But what I'm hearing you say is that's really not feasible. Is you've got to be across. You've got to be, if you're going to be a practice owner, if you're going to take on the responsibility of business, part of that responsibility is developing an interest in your marketing. Is that a fair assertion?
100%. And that doesn't mean that you have to do all of the implementation as well.
No, just be interested.
Yep, absolutely. But you need to be across the strategy. Mm-hmm. The biggest issue I see some practice owners make is that they get a marketing agency, which is absolutely go out and get some help, but they don't brief them correctly. Mm-hmm. And if you've written a great marketing strategy and you've identified your values and your brand personality and all of that kind of stuff up front and the objectives, when you've done a good job at that, create a brief for them rather than just picking up the phone and saying, hey, you know, I need a new website, for example. Create a brief for them and help them understand exactly what that vision is and get them to relate back to that vision. And brand protection in that regard, I'm a stickler for that. If I see something that is created with a different font, or if someone's just introduced another color, and I know a lot of my clients will be kind of nodding their heads because they've been on the receiving end of my reviews for leaflets or flyers or whatever, it is so super important. You don't have to recreate everything. The brand is the brand, and you need to make sure that it is absolutely consistent across every piece of your marketing activity.
I love that. And I'm thinking about a couple of conversations I've had in the past as well. And you're absolutely right. Yeah, the font I love fonts, by the way. I quite like going through all the fonts and different ones, but you're right. Having that consistency across that, typos, errors, all those little things can let you down. And it's just that attention to detail. And it's about, as you say, consistency. So if you go to the effort of creating it, you might as well go to the effort of protecting it and go from there. So I think that's really, really important. What I wanted to ask you is about a new practice, because a new practice owner might be going, you know, that's all well and good, but, you know, I'm starting from scratch. It's a greenfield site. You know, at the moment, anyone with a pulse and a credit card is kind of my ideal patient presently. And obviously, as they progress, they'll perhaps become a bit more discerning around that, or maybe they should be discerning about that from the outset. But I wanted to ask you about specifics of new greenfield or newly established practices. Marketing a established practice is a little different to a new one. So what are your thoughts about new practices?
When you're starting up a new practice, you have a blank canvas. And the great thing about that is that you can sit back and take the time to understand exactly what your vision is for that new practice. So it can, I often, you know, start with asking, okay, so, you know, what do you stand for? Like, why are you opening this practice? What do you hope to achieve here? What do you want the patient experience to be like? What kind of services do you like to, what kind of procedures and treatments do you like to give? Because whilst, yes, I understand you're a brand new practice, or you hopefully haven't opened yet, and we've started this conversation 6 months before opening.
Yeah.
If you could just be really picky and choosy about who you want to come into your practice, what do they look like? Because we can go out and find them. And the more we niche down, the better it's going to be and the easier it is for you to attract those ideal patients that you're looking for. So if you've got your marketing strategy right, and if you have worked on your pre-launch runway, so marketing your practice before it's opened, you are going to attract the right people from the start. And when you open your doors, you won't be in a position where you need to take anybody and everything that has a set of teeth, basically. Fantastic. So it is absolutely possible to do that as long as you work on your marketing strategy right up front.
Well, let's talk about that pre-launch runway, because that is going to be really critical, so you don't end up taking in with a pulse and a credit card. You're taking the right people from day one. And then, by the way, when you do that, obviously practicing life becomes much more enjoyable as well, right? So let's talk about pre-launch runway. How do you think about marketing prior to opening so that you can open with a full appointment book of the right kind of patients?
Absolutely. It's super important. And often I find that practices do get into the incorrect kind of process where they kind of think about marketing a little bit too late. And the pre-launch runway allows you to take the local community along the journey with you to opening your practice. So what it allows you to do is it allows you to build up those relationships. I'm a massive advocate of relationship marketing and building up relationships with people within the local community to be able to get to a point where you are opening your doors and you have a wait list before you open your doors. That is the ideal scenario, and that is absolutely what is possible. On the 20th of December, I also helped general practices, I launched a general practice. He had a 400 person wait list before he opened his doors. Now, that is because he took the local community using some really clever marketing strategies in local Facebook groups, particularly, and he took them along the journey of opening and helped them understand what his vision was for the practice and the patient experience and how he wanted to deliver a great service to the local community. And, you know, literally that launch timeframe can be a little bit tricky with, you know, council approvals and getting all the fit out sorted and all of that kind of stuff. But we were bringing people along the journey with us. And this whole process that I've probably launched 15 practices in 2021. And each of them, we made sure when they get the keys, they're helping the community understand that, hey, we're coming, you know, we're so excited to be here. When there's an empty shell within the practice, we're showing them that process of the transformation of what is happening and keeping them up to date with when you're going to open. So there's a lot of things that you can do. You can utilize the local newspapers for that. They're always keen to be talking about new things that are coming up within the local community. And you can virtually have a organic social media launch and a PR launch that you are not physically shelling out any marketing budget for the practice to launch.
I love that. So let's talk about planning that, because you said there's about a 6-month window. You know, for someone listening to this who's thinking, I'm going to be opening in 12 months, 6 months, whatever. What I'd like to ask you is, what's the first step in that pre-launch planning?
The very first step is working on your marketing strategy. So that needs to be done absolutely upfront and prior to you've engaged with a fit out company, because they're going to be asking you straight away, what's your name? What's your logo colors? What's the personality? You know, what are we creating here? You need to have that marketing work done upfront, developing that strategy first so that you can make sure, again, starting off as your brand custodian, you can make sure that your brand is going to be reflected in every single piece that comes together for your practice. And it might be choosing pictures on the wall. It might be figuring out whether you need a little area for kids. It might be all of that kind of stuff. It all comes back to your marketing strategy. Choosing a name, making sure the name's available, Googling it, seeing if the URL's available, going onto social media, seeing if there's anything that looks like that might be misconstrued. I've seen two practices in Sydney, one in Sydney, one in WA that have the same practice name. It can get confusing online, unfortunately. You want to do all of that good due diligence first and get your logo created after you've written your marketing strategy comes before the logo. Get your logo and brand identity sorted. And then once that is done, everything else rolls from there.
And I guess one of the questions I wanted to ask you, and this is kind of related in a sense, but what's your thoughts around location and as it relates to your marketing? Which comes first?
In terms of choosing a location, your marketing and your vision for that practice comes first because that is going to help you determine the kind of area that you want to open up in. And if you want to treat, I'm just thinking this from the top of my head, if you want to treat patients that have severe disabilities, for example, you're not going to choose a place that is difficult to access. So you're going to need to go through that process of understanding who your ideal patients and that vision for what you want is first, and then choose that location. So, you know, the branding strategy work can be done before you do anything, before you purchase or start up that new practice. It is essential that you think about all of those things because, you know, if you want to be a high-end cosmetic dentist, you're not going to position your practice amongst the kind of food court grocery area of a shopping center, for example. You know, you want to be amongst the high-end labels, the Gucci's and the Louis Vuitton's and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So you need to know what that vision is first before you go ahead and choose that location.
Yeah, 100%. Look, years ago, I was running a seminar, and it was a marketing seminar. I was running it with someone else, and we're talking about the concept of an ideal patient avatar and the vision. And there's a guy sitting at the back of the room, arms folded, you know, the sort of thing, you know, where you go, this conversation or this presentation is not going so well. Yeah, that was the body language. And he stuck up his hand and he said to me, Jesse, everything you've said is total BS, except he didn't say BS. He said it in full, in front of a room full of people. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Thanks so much. But I said, okay, so tell me why you disagree. And he went through his ideal patient avatar. They were late 30s, early 40s, high multi six-figure incomes, drove European cars, liked to travel, liked all the brand names, the Gucci's, the Louis Vuittons and all the rest of it. And yet his practice was located in a low socioeconomic suburb. And the reason I was asking about the location was exactly this. I said, so really you're expecting your high-end client to drive from their high-end suburb across town, across many, many suburbs, past many, many dentists to a low socioeconomic area to come and find you. Can you not see the disconnect there? And for the love of God, I couldn't highlight the disconnect in that. So that's why I wanted to ask you about location, because I think if you've got a vision for your practice, it's going to inform, I suspect, the location of your practice and where you set up in suburbs, where you set up within that suburb, and as you've articulated, not in the food court if you're trying to be a high-end brand. So thank you for that. I wanted to ask you a little bit about what taking on an existing practice and reputational management, because maybe you want to change the business. Maybe you've bought a practice that's got a reasonable patient base, but you know, maybe there's you want to take it from being, a family practice to a more boutique practice, or indeed maybe you're trying to overcome some negativity of the previous owner. How do you change the perception of the practice?
You know, it's a very common issue when you're purchasing a practice that potentially what is currently there isn't necessarily aligned with your vision. Mm. And what can happen is we want to, first of all, research what the current situation is within the practice. And that might be, you know, sending out some surveys to patients. It might be going on to Google reviews and having a look at what those reviews are and getting some good information about what people are saying about the practice. And likewise, you know, across social media, across Facebook groups and things like that, definitely go in there and really have a good look and think about, you know, is this practice the one that I want to be purchasing? If so, you know, can I turn this around? Now, what you need to do is you need to assess whether the brand equity that you have there and the loyalty that the current patient following has, whether that is the reputation is a good one. And if it has value, then we keep it and we enhance it. So we would be enhancing it by notifying everybody that the practice has changed hands. If the outgoing practitioner, sometimes they still stay within the practice. That's always a good thing. If that is the case, if they do have a really good reputation. But it's also really important to make sure that that previous owner is going to almost introduce the new owner and hand everything over to relieve any concerns that the patients might have. And remember, the current patients of that practice are going to build up a level of trust with the previous owner. So we want to make sure that we can capitalize on that. Now, on the reverse situation, if you are buying a practice that might be in a really good location but doesn't necessarily have a great reputation for whatever reason, then that would be where we would consider to do a rebrand of the practice and completely refresh everything so that you can make a new start. And the interesting thing is when we do that, you can almost wipe clean. If you change the name of the practice particularly, you can wipe clean any of the Google reviews that are of this previous practice, and you can pretty much shut that other account down and start afresh. So it's one of those things that you need to assess whether you are buying a practice that has a really good reputation that you want to kind of enhance, which is always great. And likewise, you know, you can absolutely turn practices around if you're buying a practice that doesn't necessarily have a great reputation by rebranding and essentially relaunching the practice to the local community again.
Yeah, cool. Some really good stuff there. Look, I know we're going to run out of time soon, but I've got another question I want to ask you. And this is perhaps a little, well, it's related, but it's a topic that I think about all the time, and that is why patients buy and the buying decision-making process that people go through before they make a significant purchase. There's obviously research and other things of that nature. But what I wanted to ask you is a little bit about, there seems to be a common perception that price is the factor that drives buying decision behavior. And I wanted to just have a conversation with you about price versus value, where price fits into the decision-making process. Clearly, it's a factor, but what's your thought about how much of a factor it is And again, coming back to the type of practice it might be and so on. So could you just speak to price and value for a moment?
Absolutely. So most people will want to equate the price to what their experience is going to be like. So you have a higher price, the expectation increases. Mm-hmm. And we need to make sure that, you know, price and what that expectation is matched. Price is definitely going to be one element of the purchasing decision, but it's not going to be the only element. And I think we need to think about the other things that drive that decision. Convenience probably is the second highest thing that people are going to be concerned about. Now, I know of a good friend of mine who recently had Invisalign, and she went and got quotes from two different practices. She actually liked the practitioner in a practice that was in a very built-up area where parking wasn't ideal. And she got a second quote, which was higher, and she actually, you know, didn't gel with that practitioner as much, but she ended up basically going with that practitioner that was more expensive because of the parking situation. And she knew that she had to go there really regularly. So whilst price is definitely a driving factor, it's not necessarily going to be the only thing that people are taking consideration to. It depends. We come back to our ideal patient avatar, what their internal and external pain points are. So if I'm a busy mum, for example, and I have children coming into their teenage years that I know that are likely to be needing orthodontic work, and I know that I have a million things to do in the afternoon, dropping kids off, picking kids up, all of that kind of stuff, convenience is going to come really high on the list. Mm. Because if I can just quickly swing in and get this job done, as opposed to it being further away from a convenient location, it doesn't even need to be the person's home, but a convenient location to them, that is also going to be a big driving factor. So again, it comes back to knowing who your ideal patient is, who is involved in the decision-making process. So you might have the patient that you've defined, but you may not have considered that there are other people involved in that decision-making mm-hmm. process that's going to influence that decision. And we need to understand that. It might be a situation where you've got, and this is going to be a really generalized comment, you've got mum doing the running around after school and dad's more interested in the price. She's more interested in convenience. And there's going to be a bit of conflict that goes on there and a discussion that's going to take place. So in our marketing, our communications, we need to make sure that we are able to promote and talk about and communicate to all of those potential different pain points so that we can be, I guess, you know, the best overall and not just on that price standpoint.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate you saying that, because sometimes if you go into some of the dental communities, there seems to be a belief that if I'm offering the cheapest dentistry, I'm going to be inundated with patients. And of course, you may well be, but they may not be your ideal patient. And of course, you know, price, as you just articulated and as we discussed, is one consideration in the whole equation. I really appreciate you teasing that out. Michelle, clearly this is a conversation we could carry on for forever and a day. And absolutely. I'm sure you and I would love to do that. And maybe we'll need to get you back for another round of this, because there's lots of really good stuff here that's not just really thought-provoking, but it's really practical. And what I really appreciate what you've shared today is you've been able to unpack the psychology of why things work, but also to turn that into practical, applicable steps for people to follow. So thank you so much for sharing your knowledge, your wisdom, and your experience today. For those folk that want to find out more about what you do, how you do it, what's the best place for them to reach you? How can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can just go onto my website, which is marketingpractices.com.au. If you want to email me, you can reach me at info@marketingpractices.com.au.
Lovely. Well, thank you so much for that. And once again, I really appreciate you coming onto the show. It's been a fun conversation. I could talk to you all day and then beyond. But again, for now, let's do this again sometime soon. So thank you once again, Michelle. You're a gem.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate your time and all your listeners' time as well.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.